take just a matter of hours. What is going on, everybody? Welcome to the 440 Guitar Podcast. I'm your host today, Darrell Powell. Thank you so much for tuning up. You can catch the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and anchor.fm/440. Be sure to follow us on Instagram as well, at the 440 Guitar Podcast. It's funny, I recently started to do some Instagram lives, checking in with some artists that I've spoken to on the podcast already. And then just speaking to some folks, you know, just in general as well, just really taking advantage of all the technology that we have at our disposal. So feel free to check that out. A lot of great content on there, a lot of cool videos of artists and whatnot that I've, you know, just have inspired me to do this podcast in the first place. So be sure to check that out. And if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me directly. You can do that via email at the440podcast@gmail.com, or you can just direct message me through Instagram as well. So feel free to do that if you'd like to do so. And today I'm very excited to speak with a really talented artist. And shout out to Jen as well for kind of connecting the dots here with this artist. So just to read a little Meyer description here, they have a brand new album, American Static, Volume 1. Is going to be released this October the 22nd via Mule Kick Records. It's a sound that's taken the Nashville-based around the world, from sold-out shows in Norway, Mexico, and South Africa, to a string of cross-country tours back home. The 440 Guitar Podcast is excited to have Andrew Leahy on the show with us. How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. I like that intro music.
Oh, they as do I. You know, it's funny. You know, I try to keep the podcast as genuine as possible. So everyone on the show, I actually really enjoy their music. I have an affinity for it. And then obviously interest in those folks, their stories as well. And, you know, I had a few back and forth with Jen on just some different artists and whatnot. Came across your project and I automatically got taken back to some Springsteen and you know, and just a bunch of other stuff where I was like, whoa, like, I really dig this, you know, so
I appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, it was very quick for me to say yes. Yes. Tom Petty vibes. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
He's my guy. Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely felt some of his spirit, you know, through your guys' music. But before we get started, you know, I'm really happy that at least around this particular time, you know, I'm seeing a lot of the artists that I've spoken to that were originally quarantined and, you know, had to be forced to think about their lives are now out and about and, you know, getting some tour dates in, you know, recording new music, inspired to record new music. You know, when it comes to just, I guess, that particular moment and then the moment that you're in now, you know, I guess, how does that feel to be able to start, you know, making music, working on music and all that?
It's good. I mean, I think, you know, when you go through any kind of abnormal period, you know, whether it's, you know, COVID or, you know, I've had a couple of like health problems of my own, and then you get out of that, you know, like not that, you know, we're out of COVID yet, but, right, you know, we're on our way out. It just, you know, it gives you like a better, you know, a renewed perspective on how great like the normal is. You know, like generally in normal times, you're always, you know, you're like pushing toward like a better place. You know, like you don't want to like be at this like normal level because it can feel kind of like static. But, you know, it's like when you go through a hard time, you realize how great normality is. Yeah. So, you know, getting like back on the road, playing a couple of gigs, even if it's, you know, we're not playing like Madison Square Garden yet, but we're also able to graduate like beyond playing in my living room, playing these live streams every week like we did last year. And it's great. It's a good feeling.
Nice. Very nice. Very nice. So on the 440 Guitar Podcast, we're really big on origin stories, how people got to where they are today. So just to start from kind of the beginning of, I guess, this musical journey for you, you know, tell me about some of your earliest memories of music.
My earliest memories of music would probably be all in the car. You know, like my mom was a Mary Kay cosmetics saleswoman.
Oh, wow.
And so I feel like my brother and I just logged hours in the car with her going all around Richmond, Virginia, which is where I grew up. You know, and I would have been, you know, like 3, 4, like 5 years old, like really young. And then when my mom would go into like these houses, like to like tell a woman, like, you should wear our eyeshadow or whatnot. You know, my brother and I would like hang out in the car with like the AC on and the radio on. You know, so it's just like, I think I've always had a love for, you know, car music, you know, and like earlier you mentioned Bruce Springsteen and Tom Petty. Like to me, those are two artists whose music just like really resonates when you're in the car on the highway, which I often am. You know, I'm a guitar musician is my job. So I've just always have been drawn to that. And I can like recall as a kid going around town with my mom, you know, going from like sales call to sales call and like looking out the window while it's just, you know, while like, you know, whatever was on the radio and kind of like thinking, oh, like I looked at this landscape yesterday, but it kind of looks like different now. You know, it has like a different like vibe, like because like the song on the radio is a different song. So I learned to just kind of, you know, quickly realize at a young age that, you know, like a music can shape your opinion about a thing or your like feeling about a thing. I was really drawn to that too.
Wow. That's really neat. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I feel like sometimes we take for granted or it just comes into perspective how effective like music is through the car, you know, as you're driving to a destination, you know, some of my memories that I have, like getting introduced to Long Beach, you know, like, oh man, I can think of the exact song when that happened, you know, and it just kind of creates this whole memory, you know? So, that's really interesting, you know, as far as just how that started for you. So you talked about Tom Petty, a little bit of Springsteen. Was there any particular song and or artist that really influenced you to like pick up the guitar?
I mean, in terms of picking up the guitar, actually, let me backtrack. In terms of, you know, like a guy like Tom Petty, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I'm one of probably like multiple generations that grew up with his music, like on the radio, like everywhere. And like, you know, he's a person I always appreciated, but I didn't kind of like uniquely appreciate him or get into him in the way that I am now until after college. You know, like when he was alive, he put out this great live album. It was actually a collection of live albums called the Live Anthology. And that just kind of blew my mind. And it, like, I thought it was like a perfect like document on like how to be a good American rock and roll band. And that's what kind of catapulted me into him. But when I was a kid, I mean, I began taking guitar lessons when I was 6, and it wasn't as much a specific artist who got me into it as much as it was my older brother who like was and is, you know, my idol and just, you know, kind of like a musical mentor. So he was, you know, like a number of years older than me, and he would have guitar lessons. I think it was every Wednesday, and we would leave our elementary school and walk to the guitar store, and I'd have to wait outside while he got his lessons. And I was young. I was, you know, either in kindergarten or first grade. And so I didn't really have homework at the time. You know, I could like read, but it probably, you know, wasn't like as absorbing as it is now. And so I just got like really bored. And I remember asking my mom if I could take lessons. And my mom said, well, yeah, if you promise that you'll keep with it and practice. And I did. So that's what got me into it. It was wanting to be like my brother and wanting to just like have a way to like spend my afternoon that was anything other than like waiting in the hallway of this music store while my brother got to go have all the fun.
Right. Wow. And then I guess taking that to like a songwriting perspective, when did you start writing your own songs as you were going through all that?
I remember in middle school, I began to kind of like cheat, write my own songs. I would take songs, or I would like take a chord progression and put my own lyrics over that. I think I remember trying to like rip off the Bryan Adams song Heaven, and I played it for my brother, and he was like, that's Heaven. Like, what are you doing? That's like Heaven with worse words over it. So you know, in high school, I wrote a couple of actual like original songs. They were all, you know, pretty bad. And then in college, I joined a band. We were called Hobson's Choice. It was initially just like a cover band. You know, I went to like the University of Virginia. They have a very strong like fraternity circuit. Like I wasn't like in a fraternity, but in order to play them, you know, it's like you had to play like 3.5 hours worth of cover songs. But then we kind of like became an original band within that. You know, but it was after college when I really got into it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice. And then
I've always like been a musician, but it wasn't really an original musician until after school.
Yeah. Interesting. And then as far as for that, do you feel like the cover band experience, do you think that kind of helped improve your own creative musicianship? Because I always find it, I find it interesting as far as just like the philosophy of, I think there is an importance, you know, of covering songs, you know, because one, you get to understand where the artist was going, you know, where they were going musically and writing and understanding that, and then kind of expanding. Do you feel like that kind of helped you as a musician when you guys started working on like your own, you know, original stuff?
Absolutely. I mean, and I continue enjoying like to cover music. You know, one of our like first gigs, like back on an actual stage, it was like earlier this summer, was in Nashville, and we did like a Traveling Wilburys, you know, like a tribute, like with a bunch of guests, but we just kind of like played like every Wilbury song on their, you know, like a first album with a different guest. And then we played a bunch of songs by the individual Wilburys. So like Bob Dylan songs and, you know, like Roy Orbison songs. It was amazing. And I think when you like take a good song and you learn how to perform it live, you're pulling apart all the parts and you're playing like the parts that you think are most important, like the parts that you have like players in the band to, you know, to like recreate. I think it's kind of like the best way to learn how a good song, you know, gets put together. Mm-hmm. So by looking at how other people put their good songs together. Mm-hmm. You know, I would never just want to be in a cover band. That's, you know, not really, you know, where I get off these days, but, I think it definitely helped. I think we'd be a very different band if we didn't like each have that experience with, you know, playing in bands like that.
Right. Definitely. Definitely. And then as far as for the Homestead, when did that become, you know, when did you start work, working with them?
Yeah. So it's been a loose lineup, up until a couple years ago. I'm really lucky to have a core group of guys now who like I love as musicians and people, but I formed the band, if you want to call it that. I formed like the idea of Andrew Leahy and the Homestead right before I moved to Nashville, which was in 2011. And I had a clear idea of what kind of music I wanted like to make at that point, because I think like everybody, you know, like, you know, I feel like a lot of like people had their like teenage, like pop punk phase or whatnot. At least like, a lot of like people like my age, like I went like through like periods of playing like different kinds of music. But then once I discovered what kind of music I, you know, kind of like felt like ground zero to me, which was that, you know, car driving, pop rock music that's evocative of people like Tom Petty. I knew that like that wasn't really the kind of music that you'd want to create as a solo artist. You know, I knew that if I just kind of like went as Andrew Leahy, it might have the connotation of like, here's this guy playing an acoustic guitar in a coffee house on a stool or something. And, yeah. You know, it's like not to like knock, you know, guys like that, but like that like isn't where this music lives. And so I wanted to have a name that, you know, kind of like denoted a band. You know, but I got here to Nashville, I quickly realized that like, you know, I was on the bottom of the totem pole. It was hard to get people to, you know, go on the road as much as I wanted to. You know, like in normal years, I'll be out playing, you know, well over like 120 gigs annually. Oh, wow. And so I went through a lot of musicians until I found the people who were like hungry enough and who we just, you know, got along and we all kind of agreed on what kind of music was good music. So I began playing with, like a Jay Dimachowski, who's my other guitarist, and I got Dan Holmes, who's our drummer, 2018, right before the album Airwaves came out.
Wow. Yeah. There's, before we talk about your album, there's such a big sound talking about, you know, American Static Volume 1. There's such a really huge, big sound and just kind of like a powerful energy, you know. When you guys, I guess as far as just kind of like working on that album or working on music, was it kind of something where, you know, you guys are all kind of contributing different parts, or was it one of those things where like, you know, you would kind of like have a set idea of like what to play for certain, for some of those songs?
Yeah. I mean, I try not to be heavy handed with, you know, like everything that I hear. I think I probably am. I think like the other guys would like tell you that I am, but, you know, it's like, I played with them enough now, you know, I played on like albums with them and played live with them, that I know what kind of musician you're. Like, how do I put this? You know, I find that I like write songs with their particular like strengths in mind. Like Jay plays the kind of guitar that I don't play in terms of like a style. He's good at things that I'm not good at, and vice versa. We can kind of like You know, so I can like write a song, I can hear, you know, what he could play, what he would want to play, you know, what his like instincts would, you know, like even like, you know, I could draw him like a to playing. I can kind of write to that because I feel like you're going to get like the best performance if, you know, if you're like writing like a to your, you know, co-bandmates strengths. You know, but a lot of like the songs on like this album and Volume 2, which comes out in early 2022, were kind of like premiered like during our weekly live streams, you know, which we kept up like for a year in the initial part of COVID-19. Mm-hmm. And we were playing with acoustic guitars and like a stripped down drum kit. So everything sounded like different, mm-hmm. but I think we were able to come up with parts and just kind of like work out arrangements in that context. And then it was easier when we plugged in and went to our producer's place and, you know, like bulked it up and made that big sound that you were talking about.
Yeah. I think it's really smart to write around an artist. They're kind of like they're what really makes them stand out, you know, as far as just like their strengths, you know, writing to their strengths. I think that's just a smart thing, you know, versus like just like writing like, this is how I want you to play it, you know, when maybe the artist can kind of like add some additional creativity to it or just some extra spice. You're like, oh, I didn't even, you know, consider that.
Sure. You know? Well, when I'm a, you know, just, you know, I'm a fan of bands. Like I really like, I'm mean, like not to just keep using this one example, but it's my favorite example. In the case of, you know, like Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, you've got this like very iconic like frontman, but you also have a guitarist, Mike Campbell, whose, you know, approach like to the guitar, you know, completely molds that band. It would sound completely different without him.
Yeah.
You know, like Benmont on keys, you know, completely essential. And like, you know, it's like the two different, like, you know, like drummers, like they've had like are, you know, awesome, great, but you can, you know, it's like, it, you know, it's like the musicians help like, you know, kind of like mold and shape like the overall picture. And, I don't know what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to say that I agree with you.
No, definitely, man. I mean, it's funny because for me, I got into Tom Petty very late, you know, very late. I have a wide variety of music to listen to, but it's funny, a lot of the stuff I end up listening to later and then diving back into their catalog. So for me, like Tom Petty, I got into just like during his songs were played during films, you know, like Jerry Maguire, yeah. Things like that. I also find a very thematic sound to your guys' album as well. You know, I can hear a lot of these songs being in films. Is that something that was like considered or just kind of like it's kind of happened organically?
I mean, I'm trying to, we haven't had a song in a film yet. We've had like two songs in car racing video games.
Oh wow.
Which I guess is cool. You know, I'm not really a big gamer, but mm-hmm. I guess, you know, it's like for like a person who like began our podcast, you know, like talking about car music, I guess that's kind of cool.
Thanks.
And we had a song in that TV show Nashville, but, yeah, I mean, I think it's just, you know, I want to make the kind of music that I would want to listen to. And what I'm drawn to in general is just kind of like a bigger rock band with like larger hooks and trying to get that, you know, nice balance of like the pop, you know, quality and like the art quality that a person like Tom Petty would have. I think it's, you know, it's easier like to go like, you know, like with either extreme, but to combine them and have that right balance, I think like that's like where the challenge and where the real art is.
Nice. So kind of transitioning into, you know, American Static Volume 1. Tell me a little bit as far as like was this kind of like a concept album or what was kind of your thoughts as, you know, this collection of work was being made?
Yeah. Well, originally our plan was to put out one song a month for like as long as we could, because, you know, I also play, you know, in the band of another artist, like an outlaw country artist named Elizabeth Cook, who I love as a person and a musician. And I played on her album called Aftermath, which came out last year. I think it's a great album. Mm. But like as like that was going to come out, you know, like 2020 originally looked like it was going to be a year that was like pretty heavy with Elizabeth Cook, you know, gigs. And we had, you know, we had like a 2 month, like a tour plan cross country. Everybody was like really pumped about like her great new album. And so I had just kind of cleared my plans with Andrew Leahy and the Homestead. We were going to put out one song a month to keep the momentum, but it was going to be a year with Elizabeth Cook by and large. Mm. And then when COVID happened, you know, like every plan was scrapped, of course. And I feel like, you know, I was bummed that I couldn't go out on the road with her, but also just like having all those obligations like lifted, gave me like the space to, you know, write more songs. And I tend to be like a really, really busy person. Like at that point, my wife was wrapping up graduate school in another town in Tennessee. So, you know, I'd like be on the road with like my band. I'd come home for a couple of days. I'd go out with Elizabeth's band. I'd come home for a couple of days. I would like make sure that our house in Nashville wasn't, you know, falling apart. And then I would go to Knoxville and hang with my wife for a couple of days. It was crazy. And when COVID happened and my wife graduated kind of all at once, I just had like time to like listen and like tap into whatever.
Yeah.
And so we just came up with a lot of songs, and then we had those live streams every week. It was every Thursday night. It was called Live and Online. And we had like a bunch of people come out every week. And it was amazing. It was a great time. I mean, COVID like wasn't amazing, but I mean, it was a great silver lining. It was a great way to kind of keep playing with, you know, with my band.
Yeah.
And so we had all this like new material, and we wanted to keep, you know, changing up our set lists every Thursday. We didn't want to, you know, give this crowd the exact same, you know, gig every week, or they wouldn't keep coming back. Mm. And so we had like the reason to, you know, get these new songs into shape. And so like before the end of it, we just had well more than, you know, than one album's worth of music. And we thought that like they were all good enough. We didn't want to have to like chop it in half and, you know, keep like 2/3 of it. So rather than have one 12 track album, you know, we came up with like two different 9-track albums.
Nice.
That's and it's smart. Not a concept album. And I think like musically too, I think it goes well beyond what our last album Airwaves was. You know, like Airwaves was like meant to be like a tribute to like late 80s pop rock, what we've been like talking about. It was meant to like evoke everything. I mean, you know, it's like the production was even in that world with a lot of like reverb and such. Mm. And with this album, we just had like 18 songs, and, you know, like each song we track the way that it was supposed to be tracked. Just, you know, like what kind of a, you know, like a tune is this? Is it like a Talking Head song? Okay, we'll give it kind of like a mid 80s, you know, like dance pop, like sparkle. Is it more of like a Tom Petty Heartland rocker? Okay, we'll treat it like that. And so I don't think it's a concept album. I think it's just more of like a timestamp of an era that was, you know, like a pretty productive for us.
Nice. Yeah, because it's a really cohesive project, you know, for volume one.
I like hearing that.
A lot of those songs, you know, and even in the sequencing as well, as far as from just, you know, how the order of where they're at. It's just, yeah, just connected really well, you know, so you kind of get this whole experience listening to it. You know, I feel like I'm in the car.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I love that. And oddly enough, it was created like during a time when I did like the least like driving of my entire like having a licensed life, you know? You know, but I think it's just, you know, it's kind of like cooked into you when you spend that much like time on the highway. And when my wife was in school, I mean, you know, like most like days I would like drive, you know, more than like 4 hours a day, like most days for like 4 years running. So it was just, you know, I was in that headspace.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Were there any, were there any like, I guess just like noted moments, maybe working on the project or just some of the songs on your volume one where you're like, man, I remember how we, you know, we worked on this song and how it came to be. Any moments like that?
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple of, well, I guess I'm looking at the track list right now because it's still like new to me, like which ones are on which volume.
But yeah,
yeah, it ends with, you know, like a Disco Ball and My Avalanche, like both of those. You know, our piano ballads in a way. I'm not like traditionally a pianist. We had one in my house growing up, but I never really like took actual lessons on it. I just apply what I know as like a trained guitarist, like to the piano. So I know how to, you know, like make chords, but I'm sure I'm like making them in a way that would cause an actual like piano player to cringe. But, you know, like we've got this, great, like old upright piano in the house right now. It, you know, it came down with us when we moved from Ann Arbor, Michigan, where we lived like, you know, like previously. Mm. It's like 100 years old. It always goes out of tune. It's like, you know, it's like, you know, I got scratched up like by the cats, but I completely love it. Mm. And so, you know, I'm usually gone. I don't get to play it often, but given that I was home like the past, you know, like year and a half, I played a whole lot of piano. So, you know, coming up with these like piano ballads and a song like My Avalanche has weird chords. It's, you know, it's like you access, you know, like new ways of writing when you're playing on a new instrument. So it was a good, you know, like a challenge to try to even, you know, one, get the song out, like onto like the instrument. And then like two, like figure out, okay, like how do we become Andrew Leahy in the Homestead when Andrew's playing piano and there's like not as much guitar. Mm. So like, that was cool. A couple songs just, you know, were quick. I'm looking at the list right now. Mm. You know, I mean, you know, Good at Gone was easy. It's, you know, it's like there's songs that just, you know, where they're going to go. And then there's a song like Become the Enemy, which, you know, is more like poppy, more like early 80s than we usually go. You know, I kind of got into this, you know, like a Talking Heads like phase where they were just like all I wanted to like ever hear ever. Mm. And we tried to like nod to that. And that like took a little bit more exploration because it's not what we often do, you know? Mm.
Yeah. One of my favorite songs is Keep the Car Running. I really like that song. Really like it. I was like, oh man, I like this a lot. Well,
like, that is one of the ones that is in a car a car game. I think it's called like NASCAR Heat 5.
Oh, okay.
I've never played it. It'll be a trip to play that. But yeah, that's another song. I mean, I feel like that one kind of could have, you know, gone on Airwaves, our last song, our last album. You know, Airwaves was kind of like a tribute, like I said, to like pop rock radio. And Keep the Car Running is that. It's just about like how great it is to like hear a song in the car and to not want to get out until like that song is over. And it's meant to like channel the like feeling of speeding. It's a fast one.
Nice.
Yeah.
I guess a couple.
I'll tell you a quick like anecdote about Keep the Car Running.
Oh yeah, please. Yeah.
I mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
We were tracking the guitar solo on that one, and it was a thing where, you know, like, I was probably on my like third or so like take, and I was like beginning like to be like, I'm not getting it like right away. And like everybody is like listening and like judging. And I think like my wife was in the studio that day too, which is awesome, but it was like another like layer of pressure because I wanted to come off as like a badass guitarist. And so then we were, you know, I was like, you know, like trying like another like a take, and halfway through I heard like everybody in the control room like yelling and cheering, and I was like, awesome, like I'm kicking ass on this one. And what it actually was my producer's daughter Ivy had like lost like a tooth or something, and everybody was going wild over it and congratulating her. But ironically, like, they wound up keeping that, you know, guitar take. I feel like once I realized that, you know, it's like nobody was, you know, like looking at me and paying like attention, I just played. And that's when it worked. There's probably a lesson in there.
Right, yeah. Yeah. How interesting. It's like, yeah, I got it. It's like, oh, well, that's cool, too.
upstaged by a five-year-old. Right.
Yeah. Children are the future. That's just what goes
you
to show.
You win again, Ivy.
Oh, yeah. Man. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of energy in the album. Have you guys already kind of have a tour date set as far as for the volume one?
We've got a bit. You know, a lot is getting canceled, unfortunately, which I understand. And, you know, I got a breakthrough case of COVID while playing a gig. Mm. So I'm okay. But, you know, I don't want to put, you know, if there is a risk, I don't want to contribute all that much, you know, like, to it. So I understand why they're getting canceled. We are getting to do this, you know, like, thing that we love playing. Like, it's, you know, kind of an annual tradition. It's called the Rock Boat. Mm. Are you like familiar with these kind of, you know, like, music festivals on cruise ships?
No. That one sounds familiar, but no, typically I'm not.
It's a whole thing, man. It's, you know, like, they've got like the Joe Bonamassa Blues Cruise and, you know, they're like Skinnerd Cruise. They have all these country cruises, like the Outlaw Country Cruise. Mm. But like the Rock Boat is kind of the original in that world, and it's amazing. Like this year, it leaves out of Miami. It's about a week. We're going to Jamaica and somewhere else.
Wow.
And on board, there's just constant, you know, concerts. I'm trying to think how many bands play, you know, like 25 or 30. It's amazing.
Wow.
And so we are getting to do that. It was meant to be in January. It got pushed out to November. I think it's going to happen. There's a whole lot of safety protocols, which I love. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to happen. And I love that because it's like you're on a boat with like 3,000, you know, crazy music fans who love music enough to go on a boat for a week and listen to it constantly. And those are our people.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds like a really fun
time. We have that in November, like right after, you know, when the album comes out. And honestly, it kind of influenced when the album was going to come out because we couldn't have imagined playing the boat and not playing these new songs.
Nice. Phenomenal. Yeah. Phenomenal. One of the last questions I have, more so of a selfish question for me. Have you guys thought about doing like a vinyl release?
You're a vinyl guy, aren't you?
I am. I started getting into it. I'm way behind in my catalog, but yeah, I've been picking up some vinyls and whatnot. So,
we should. We don't have plans yet. I heard that there was a long wait time on vinyl on vinyl production.
Oh wow.
Which I'm just using as, you know, like an excuse. Like I would love you know, like to do it. Yeah. We should do it. We had a, you know, we were, you know, kind of wondering, okay, well, like 18 songs, is that going to be like a triple vinyl?
Right.
What's like the best way to do this? But that could be a cool project. We'll see how people respond to volume one. And, you know, hopefully I can get some, like, you know, like resources all together. Like, even if it's for, you know, like a combined, like best of the American Static project,
you know,
coming out, you know, like next year sometime, maybe. That's a good idea.
Absolutely. Yeah, because like
I'm always asked too, like in Europe, when we go and play Europe, like everybody in Europe wants vinyl.
Really?
So I'm always asked.
Wow.
Them. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Especially in Norway. They call it vinyl in Norway. I love you, Norway.
Oh,
I love all my Norway friends. You have like amazing English, and I could like never, you know, I can't even get through like a phrase like in Norwegian. But they call it vinyl.
That's
like
cool.
It.
I dig that. Yeah, because like the artwork is really neat too. You know, the album artwork.
Oh yeah, I appreciate that.
You know, so like just like having that, you know, extrapolated and just any other stuff in there. I just take a lot of value in that. You know, the older I get, I'm just like, oh man, like a vinyl copy.
It's a vibe.
Really
dope. It's like the light, you know, like a pink color too. It's kind of like, you know, new for us. But it's an artist who's you know, in Philadelphia, or like, yeah, like who goes under the alias of Cult Class, but her name is Caitlin. She's a great collage artist. We gave her like the album and said, "What does it sound like to you?" And that's what we got. And I think it's perfect.
Nice. I think she nailed it.
Like so, legs out of car window in a pink sky.
There you go.
That's what it sounds like to me too.
Very cool. Well, Andrew Leahy, I really appreciate you speaking with me today. This is a really fun conversation. Really good album. Really great project. I'm looking forward to the volume two as well after this one comes out later this month. But definitely would be.
I'll give you the volume two in advance.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah, because I'm like, this is so cool.
I appreciate it.
But thanks so much.
I'm a fan of what you do too. So I appreciate you having me on here, man.
Oh, thank you, man. Thank you. Yeah, this is it's crazy, man. This has turned into something more than I ever thought it would, and I'm grateful for every episode. So yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you.
When as an independent musician, I appreciate like all the like attention you give to like other indie artists too. I think it helps. It helps us a lot.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, man. That's my life and blood, you know, as far as just, you know, really highlighting those stories and whatnot, those folks. Well, there you have it, folks. This is Jarrell Powell here from the 440 Guitar Podcast. We'll jam again soon. And have a good day. If the levee gets up, face the flood and try my luck. I used to freeze, used to lack my knees, but now it's time for me to come unstuck. Yeah,